Guys, I am Brad Howard, and once again, welcome to the High Gravity Male edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. And on the phone today, I've got my man, Adam Gallaud. And Adam has a kind of a unique perspective on some things, and I'm going to joke on him and call it old man game, but it's really not. Really, what it is I would call it being a little more sophisticated in how you're choosing women and interacting with women. And I'm going to ask you about this, Adam, but what do you think? I mean, if you're less than probably 25 years old, this might not even apply to you.
Well, it's a look for what's ahead. I have this whole theory, and I'm actually going to be writing a book on it next year, that what young guys, 18 to say 27, learn through, say, pickup and, you know, other attraction techniques, what they're learning to convey, the things like confidence and knowledge and higher value, et cetera, are things that women expect from a man after he turns 30, like, for example, at 35, that younger men learn how to convey what older men need to actually embody. And when I say older men, 30 and up, you can't play games anymore. You can't be conveying shit that you don't actually have. And you've really got to develop the qualities of confidence, generosity of spirit, leadership, what I call kingship. And because women not just want to be attracted, they don't just want to be attracted to you anymore. They really need to admire you. And so this is all about stepping into the game. It's really stepping into the game of life, getting your life together and building those sort of six essential areas of your life that women can really admire you for and be polarized.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up so early in the conversation, because it's something I kind of touched on last week. And then, you know, when your Ageless Attraction is coming out as of today, as a matter of fact, you know, I was kind of interested to know that that's one of the things you guys have hit on, because for myself, when I think about it, like most guys, when they think, how can I be attractive? You know, inherently there's no kind of internal roadmap. You don't really get that, because there's just so many things out there that, you know, people are saying, oh, this is attractive. So there's really no roadmap. But when you say, you need to be admired, well, inherently in that, guys can go, okay, well, now I kind of have an idea of where I need to go. It's kind of like, that makes sense. Like, okay, well, what happened? How can I become admired?
Yeah. It's not what you do. It's who you are.
Sure. I mean,
it's not the show you put on in front of women. It's who you actually are. Cause also, as you start attracting women who are over 25, you know, they get much smarter, and they can tell, like, if you're really a man they are attracted to, they admire, they want to be proud of when they go out with you, versus, you know, some guy who kind of catches their attention with shiny objects.
Gotcha. So let's talk about these six things that you mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, how to generate admiration, because I think most of the people that are listening, I think they're kind of gripped on the admiration thing. It just seems so much more of a high value type of a thing. Like, trying to be attractive to a certain degree might sound a little sleazy, like manipulative, things like that. Whereas you can't really manipulate admiration, so to say. It either is or is not. So let's talk about those things really quickly.
Well, it means to me really getting your life handled. And we'll step back a second. I know, you know my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a Hollywood writer and producer for a bunch of years, in addition to a bunch of other stuff. And so one thing that I've spent a lot of time doing is crafting character. And so I know a lot about character, dialogue, what brings characters together, conflict, all the stuff that makes a whole life. It's always been kind of a passion of mine. And what Ageless Attraction is about, and what real attraction is about as your guy who passes 30, is about having your life handled. Now, it doesn't mean everything's handled, but there are six areas, after doing tons of research with lots of women and lots of great teachers. We can talk about some of my teaching background if you want, which are the things that truly sort of trigger a woman's attraction and then devotion. So The six areas, just real quick, are, you know, your internal mindset. You know, do you have that handled? And we can get to that. The second one is your approach and connection skill set. This would fall into the category of you know, attraction skills. Like, what do you say when you walk up to a woman in a supermarket? What do you say at a bar? What do you say online? How do you approach younger women? That's one of my favorite subjects. The third category would be, your body, your vitality. Certainly, you know a lot about that, and we can talk about. I guess your guys probably know a lot more about that than most people.
Sure.
Women are attracted to a man who's brimming with vitality, with energy. They don't need you to have a six pack. They like you to have a six pack, but they really don't care that much. If you're disciplined in how you eat and your exercise and you dress with some care, and you hold your body in a certain way, you breathe deeply, the way you hold your shoulders, your eyes, where you stand in a room, all these things we cover. How do you project authority as a man with your body?
Uh-huh.
And then the fourth category would be, advanced sexual skills, sexual depth. This is also one of my favorite subjects since I was married for a bunch of years in my 20s, 30s. So, I have made it a big part of my life to make up for that. And, and I've studied with some amazing women and some amazing people and have dated a lot over these years. I even founded a company called OneTantra.com where I gathered 30 of the best tantra teachers together. We have a community where they teach sort of advanced sexual skills. And I've worked closely with David Data. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah, I've been working very closely with him for a couple of years, producing his workshops. And a kind of erotic depth, sex as a mode of communication and exploration rather than just body gymnastics, which I'm also a fan of. But women look to a man who's got some, you know, skin on his bones, you know, who's been around for a few years, to be able to lead her deeply into a genuine erotic experience that can last hours or, you know, weeks. So erotic depth, let's call it that. And we have a lot in Ageless Attraction on that. And the other area would be really an understanding of women. You know, I'm over 30. I'm over 40. It amazes me too, by the way.
That you made it that far?
When I look at my, like when you scroll down, when you sign up for something online, you start scrolling through the years. You know?
Yeah. Are you between 20 or 25? Oh, yeah. I'm going to be, as bad as I hate to say it, I'm going to be 33 in a couple of days. And I don't feel old. I swear I don't feel older than 21 most days. But, you know, that's when you start scrolling down those things, that's when it really kind of catches up where you're like, oh, man, really?
No, it's true. I mean, look, I'm 48. It's hard for me to even say that. And I feel exactly like I did when I was 25. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I hang with women in their 20s. I have a 19-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And his girlfriends come around, they go, I can't believe you're not a teenager. And the reason is because I'm totally mature. No, the reason is because
it's not the other one.
It's because I'm totally fit, you know, but I'm excited about my life. I enjoy my life so much and I really try to embody these six areas. And you can read it on me because I'm always growing and I'm in the book. I talk about admiration, the real payoff of the end of this program is called The Way of the Inspired Man. Is I'm inspired about being alive, you know. Mm-hmm. And part of that, as you get older, you'll see is like, you know, you realize you don't have infinite time anymore, and
sure.
So you take your days much more seriously and your nights much more seriously, and if you're paying attention and if you have vitality, you say, I'm going to grab as much of this life as possible. I'm going to do as much good as I can. I'm going to live exactly like I want to. And it pays off, you know. People see that. Women are attracted to a man who's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So ageless attraction is about really being on fire about these six areas of your life, consistently learning, growing, and being a beacon for women.
Yeah, that's interesting. You said that as far as being a beacon, because like I'm always interested in yeah, people can say certain things. We all know that. But where's the proof? Where's the you know, I mean, there are a lot of people that say they're great with women, which I don't think is that big of a deal. I mean, I think we talked about it before. It's getting easier and easier as you get older in doing these things. It's just a matter – it's not even a matter of having the right things to say necessarily anymore. It's about being the right person, and it just naturally just kind of happens. But it was really interesting. We've shot the breeze a couple of times at seminars and things like that, and then, you know, I'll turn around and – next thing you know, you've got some woman following you around and you're talking to her or whatever, and she's like engaged, and it's not like, oh, who's this jackass talking to me? She's like in kind of enraptured in conversation. I'm like, look at that sly dog over there. You know? And so that
I get lost time.
Right. Well, but okay, irrelevant of that or irrespective of that. You know, but it's just nice to see people actually embody what they talk about and not just, you know, be kind of a sheet in the wind flapping something off. So I can say that. At least I can say that, you know, you actually do what you say, which
I enjoy. I really enjoy smart, ambitious, beautiful women who are evolved, you know, and who are evolving. I'm sure anyone you saw me talking to is someone who's probably entrepreneurial in spirit, probably does yoga, you know, has some depth to her, cares about her body, cares about what she puts in her body, including me. But I was thinking about food. But yeah, you know, I mean, there's so many amazing women out there, and they're energizing.
Sure. Oh yeah, when you get it, I've said it time and time again, man. It's you get the right woman in your life and you go far. You get the wrong woman in your life and you'll go nowhere. And it's unbelievable how you would not think. I've had it happen to me, and I'm sure other people have, and I'm sure you've had too. I mean, it's unbelievable how much of a pull that can have, no matter how strong you are.
Absolutely, you know, and you've hit on. I mean, I've got a few more years on you, and you know, you've got it young, and I wish I got it younger. But that is one of the biggest truths of life. You know, they say the five people you hang around is the level you rise to or fall to in terms of negativity, positivity, in terms of your wealth, in terms of your happiness. And I can't underline that enough. I just saw the movie The Hangover last night. I missed it. and I was just like squirming watching Ed Helms's character. Did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his fiance at home.
Oh, he's just getting owned bad. Yeah.
Owned, and it was so painful to see. And in the first section of the basic book of Ageless Attraction, I mean, I said the first thing you've got to do is you've got to clean up your inner monologue. You've got to clean up what's in your mind. And if you've got negative people in your life, if you've got women, I counseled somebody last night as a friend who has a woman in his life. I love her. And I said, what exactly do you love about her? And we got down to it. You know, and she's killing him. I mean, she's killing his enthusiasm to become the man he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he cares about her, and I appreciate that. But I said, if you compromise yourself and you're not on target to be the man that inspires you, you're going to start hating yourself in a couple of – and I've seen this happen so many times. You're going to start hating yourself in a couple of years because you're trying to please her and you're not living your real life. And now she's going to start hating you because she can't admire you because you're not living your purpose, even though she's the one who helped undermine you living your purpose.
Oh, and then you start hating her.
It's a nice cycle of hatred. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's the funny part about it is that instead of taking, like I say, because I've been there, I understand completely where it's that shift instead of, you know, you doing what you need to do to make the best person that you can be a reality. Next thing you know, you're getting sidetracked trying to make sure that you got her taken care of and you're not taking care of you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, it's like this big blame shifting game starts going on, and you're like, God, you're like, damn it. If only she wasn't blank, you know, whatever you want to put in there. And it's tough. But you know, I got this from, I forget who it was. It was either Jerry West or Andy Jenkins. I was reading one of their emails and he was saying, I think it was Jerry, and he was saying, do you find it odd that when you get on airplanes, they tell you when the mask drops down to please put your mask on first before you assist anyone else, even your own kid?
Right.
So there's got to be something kind of inherent in that we can kind of take home. And, you know,
it's even more powerful. I agree 100%. I think it's a great example. I think it's even more powerful in an intimate relationship because mm-hmm. you're really dependent on each other's well-being. If you're not taking care of yourself, not only will she die, but
right.
there's a level of despising. I mean, this is what happens. And a lot of guys in their 20s, you know, really haven't seen this yet. But once women get into their 30s, they need to look up to a man as a – and I use this term because there's really no better term – his king energy. You know, mm-hmm. is he someone who's got his – is he taking care of his realm? That's – and I talk about in the book, you know, just being cool isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see you guys taking care of his realm. That means taking care of his body, and you're the expert there, taking care of his interior life. Is he someone who complains? Is he someone who blames? And this is the first part of those six pieces of the six modules of the basic book in this program. You know, get a grip on what you're putting out into the world by getting a grip on what's going on inside your mind. A man who complains or who blames anybody else for anything in his life is a weak man. So you've got to start by taking control of your life, taking responsibility for your life, and creating your life. rather than blaming other people for your not life not being what it is. And I give very, very specific – and this, the information is out there, you know, very specific mind practices and speech practices so that you're putting out that vibrant positive energy that you're creating your life like a king. You know, you're creating your realm. By the way, realm also goes for the people around you. Are you taking care of your family? After you're 30, you know, you're not the kid anymore.
Sure.
How are you taking care of your parents? How are you taking care of your brothers and sisters? Your neighbors, your workplace. Are you approaching the world like a king, or are you still approaching the world like a happy young prince? Now, look, I love being a happy young prince, you know, but the difference between being a prince and a king is that the prince can screw up all he wants, and he knows that the king stands behind him, right? So he can go back to the castle.
Yeah, exactly.
Get away with anything. But once you're over 30, 35, you know, you are, you know, the buck stops with you.
Or it should.
It's exactly, and if more people were like that, this country wouldn't be in the mess it is.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'll kind of draw an analogy based on I think something Warren Buffett said. I read, and I guess we can pull this in because most people would kind of get this. But he said that whenever he is looking to invest in companies, he'll go back and look at all their annual reports, and he'll read through these annual reports and see what the tone is and how they and see if the people that are running the company are taking blame or taking, you know, responsibility for actions, or if they're passing blame. So like one annual report might read something like, well, you know, this happened. However, you know, we could have done a better job anticipating it by doing this, you know, in the future. These are some of the things we learned, you know, blah, blah, blah. Basically saying that, yes, some things happened. Yes, we own up to them. We could have done a better job, and let that be that. And then couple that with another annual report, which would say, yeah, business wasn't as good this year, you know, blah, blah, blah. The reasons are because of market conditions, because of this, because of that. Things that are totally dependent kind of externally and out of control. And he was saying that those, whenever he reads, whenever he's looking at a company, he reads those reports, those are the second ones he will never invest in, because those people don't have control of their own destiny. And they don't even think it's even possible. It's all somewhere else. They have nothing to do. But whereas the other guys, even though they kind of had a mini failure or whatever it is, the fact that they're owning up to it and saying, you know, we could have done a better job is a lot more kind of inspiring, because he knows even though it went down that year, at least they have some sense of internal control of what's going on inside.
That's an amazing analogy. I'm so glad you brought that up. I did not know that he said that. I just actually downloaded on Audible Snowball, I think it's called, his biography. So I only need 1,000 hours to listen to it.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I mean, I actually started my life as a Wall Street broker, my adult life.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I know a lot about Warren. I've never heard that. And I can't agree with that more. It's amazing that it applies to economics as well on that level. You know, and it also, look, it's a parenting thing. You know, my kids, when they were small, they would come in and say, you know, it broke, like the plate, it broke. And I'm like, right. Really? It broke.
Yeah, just sitting there. Sweet. No BB gun was involved at all. Okay.
Nothing. And so I really brought them up very early with that intention that you take responsibility for not only the bad things you've done, you take responsibility for your life. You know, I've had – and look, I have to be honest here. When I got divorced about 10 years ago, I was a mess. I had such low self-esteem. I can't even tell you. I thought no one would ever date me. Literally, I thought no one would ever date me. I thought it was a total failure. Mm-hmm. In my life, I'd lost my family, which was my most precious thing. Even though I was just so unhappy in the marriage, you know, the family was amazing, you know?
Sure.
And I've had women say to me in recent years, you know, they ask me, like, you know, someone asked me who your favorite writers, and, you know, I'm a writer by profession. And I'll mention a couple of writers, and they'll say, and me. And they'll go, well, that's kind of obnoxious. And I go, no, I write what I like. I mean, that's why I'm my favorite, because,
sure,
you know, so I know my value. So I take responsibility for the good things in my life, as well as for, you know, my screw ups. And by the way, this is a real quick lesson, okay, for guys. And again, something I taught my sons. If someone compliments you, a nice, clean, direct thank you. Mm-hmm. That's it. Right? No hemming and hawing, no making a big deal out of it. A clean, direct thank you. Owning your value. And a lot of ageless attraction is about, by the time you're 35, you should know your value, what you need to accomplish, what you've already accomplished, and not play games with that, but really be able to stand in your, what I call the qualities of the advanced masculine,
mm-hmm.
which is another part of the book.
Go ahead and touch on that for a second, because I don't think guys really, to a certain degree, understand that. A lot of people say that. They say, you know, you have to be a man. You have to be a masculine man. And,
right.
You know, and McKay and I talk about it a lot. Same thing with Alex and I. I mean, it's kind of a – I mean, all these guys are great guys. But then you have other people that are talking about it. But it's not – it's almost like acting the part instead of being the part. And there's a huge difference. Maybe go into that a little bit as far as how you're thinking about it.
Well, you've mentioned two guys, Alex Allman and Scott McKay, and both of them I admire as men. And they both actually are exemplars of one of what I call the 10 qualities of the advanced masculine, which is the ability to say the truth. You know, they're both very, very much truth-telling guys, and they can tell you the truth with a sword and just lay it on the line without ego, but really let you know what's going on. I've seen them do it. But they also know how to say the truth with compassion. And actually being able to tell the truth is one of the qualities of the advanced masculine.
Right.
I'll run through them real fast. And that these are the things that women really look for from a man. One is your ability to create safety. Now there's physical safety, there's emotional safety.
Mm-hmm.
If you're 35 and above and someone cuts you off on the highway and you start screaming at that car and a woman's sitting with you, you're not a safe guy. Like you don't have control, you don't have equanimity, you don't have that kind of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
Trustability is the second one. Do you keep your word? And in Ages of Attraction, I actually show you, having made every mistake possible, by the way, because remember, I entered the dating life late in my late 30s knowing nothing, because I got married when I was 23.
Right.
So I really learned the hard way a lot. How do you set it up so that you show that you're trustable? What are the little ways that you do it? And one of many practices I offer in what I call the playbook, which are things you can actually do, is, you know, you show up, you say you're going to pick someone up at 5. You're there at 5. You're not there at 5:01.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you make that a practice, and she will notice. And you also make a point of it subtly that these are the kind of contracts you keep. You know, you're impeccable with your agreements. The third is integrity, that you live what you say. The fourth is that you are the social hub of your life. Now, this is actually one of my favorite subjects, because so many guys make the mistake. When we're young, look, we're looking up to guys. We're looking up to other men. We're looking out to the world to feed us and give us ideas and direction, which is great. You're supposed to be doing that. As you start passing into your 30s and 40s, you need to become not so much the seeker of value out in the world, but the one who offers the value. You're the hub of value. Now, this goes with your body energy, like you teach.
Mm-hmm.
It goes with generosity of spirit, which is number 6, by the way, of the qualities I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it also comes with social value. So you were saying, and we had this talk earlier, how easy it's become to meet great women. One of the easiest things you can do is become the social hub. That means you create, and it's so easy on Facebook or meetup.com, you create a roving cocktail party every Thursday night. It goes to a cool different bar in your area. You create a roving dinner group that you create a group, and it's so easy to friend people and friend people, especially with Facebook, that you will have an up and running social group in within a month. You'll have 30 people. In 3 months, you'll have 200 people
you're
inviting. And you're the guy who put it together. You know, you know Brent Smith, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he has this phrase he always talks about, being the mayor.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. And that's part of the book, by the way. He's part of this project.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed him and got some of his best practices. And being the mayor means if you're at a party, if you're at a bar even, you walk up, you throw your arms around the shoulder of a couple of girls, you go, is everything okay? You're having a good time tonight? And they'll be like, sure. You know, fantastic. I'm really glad. If you need anything, let me know. And you just walk on. You know, they don't know who you are.
Right.
And you didn't say you own the bar, but you're taking responsibility. You're saying, hey, I'm so comfortable with myself. If you need anything, you know, let me know. And a conversation can happen right there. You can actually do this more easily by creating your own group. You actually are the mayor of your group. So, I don't know, if you love mountain biking, if you're a lover of yoga, if you're a lover of guns, you know, if you love horses, you create a group. Everybody meets, or it's just a social group, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you live, where do you live? In North Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you can still talk to me. I went to UVA undergrad.
Oh, yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine, dude.
All right. So University of Virginia. So, for example, if I lived in Washington area where a lot of UVA folks went, I would create a UVA alumni cocktail group, you know,
mm-hmm.
easiest thing in the world to get onto Facebook and find a bunch of people who went to UVA, look on their friends list, friends' friends, tell them to bring their friends. Now you own that list and you own that party list. Okay, so that's what I talk about being the giver of value, and that falls under the rubric of being a king, because you are the provider of value rather than the seeker of value from other people. So you see how that fits in there?
Yeah, that's interesting. Let me touch on that really quickly, because I kind of got – this is one of the things I kind of – I'm not going to say irritates me, but there's a primary driver. And a lot of people – I've been talking about the concept of primary drivers for a couple of weeks now. But a lot of guys don't understand that, you know – let's use a bar example, right? And you brought, and you said it, you said be the giver of value. The reason people are valuable is because they give value. It's not anything crazy. It's just, that's just the way it is. Right. But the primary driver with women, a lot of times, like if a woman goes out to a bar, chances are she's not going out to be hit on by stupid guys. It's not fun.
No.
So if you go out, and this is why, I mean, I was trying to talk to Craig Clemens and get his input about this, but this is why a lot of club promoters don't let guys in the club unless they know them, because they know that the guys are in predator mode,
right,
and they're going to make all the women have a shitty time, and the women are never going to come back. So here's what I've been thinking of, and I'm gonna shoot this at you and see if you agree or disagree. The primary driver for most women is fun. Right? So they're going out to have fun somehow, some way, no matter what happened during the day. The reason they go out is to have fun. Being flirty with is fun. If you have a good conversation with a woman at the end of the night, whether it be a date conversation or whatever, she will say, I had fun tonight. I had a fun time talking to you. It's never anything else. It's I had fun doing this with you. And so I don't think guys understand that, being the giver of fun.
Yep. Again, most guys also don't remember, because, look, we tend to get blinded by beautiful women. I actually did a program called How to Talk to a Beautiful Woman, and I interviewed, you know, models. I'm in L.A., so,
sure,
you know, models, Playboy models, women who have won Miss Teen USA, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, I said, what do guys do that you hate? And, yeah, they get hit on constantly, and what they don't get is fun. And what most guys don't realize is that most women are bored. Most people are bored.
Oh, sure.
That's why American Idol does so well. We like to see other people having fun and living their dream. Which,
right,
you know, I actually like American Idol. I haven't seen it for a couple of years. But, I just to go back for a second, we'll come back to fun. I was just reminded, I used to make my kids watch it. I have two sons. Now they're 16 and 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, this was my excuse to watch it, right? Because I couldn't tell them I actually wanted to see it. So I said, I want you to watch how each singer responds when they get the information and see who complains and throws a fit and see who takes it like saying, thank you, you know, I've learned something. And it goes back to that taking responsibility conversation we were just having.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized it goes back. You know, this is something I've been thinking about and,
sure,
you know, trying to live for a long time. Okay, so fun and humor. Absolutely. Most women are bored. Most very pretty women get the same shit thrown at them every single day. Oh, you have a beautiful smile. Oh, you have beautiful eyes, you know,
mm-hmm,
which is a way of saying, oh, you have beautiful tits. But, you know, they can't say tits, so they say eyes.
Yeah, exactly. as they say, you have beautiful eyes, they're looking down at their boobs.
Exactly.
Exactly. Oh, they're so great. Or are they? Yeah, go ahead. Are they brown? No, they're really blue.
Okay. It's crazy. I mean, but they hear the same thing constantly, and there's no depth, there's no fun. They don't open up into something. You know, here's a tactic or a technique or something to do, because I'm really into practical stuff. So, you know, I've also written, I'm probably best known for my book on online dating, which you could send guys to.
Yeah,
it's called Deep Attraction Online, and this was my initial sort of entry into the dating world, because I am a writer. I've taught writing at Stanford. I've done sort of very high level marketing. I'm a poet. I love language, and it's fun for me to play with language. I think I lost my track there.
That's okay. You're good at language. And
talking about fun. Give me a second. To do with getting them laughing, I'm sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure. I was going to say, well, you're here. We're listening to the Emmy-nominated Adam Gallad get discombobulated with words. This is awesome.
Get me excited is the thing. I mean, like, I love this subject so much. But,
right,
you know, to get people laughing, I think is
– No, well, you were going into a tactic.
Oh, a tactic to get them. Oh, yes, right. So an online dating, of course. So with online dating, you know, women go on and they get hit on constantly. Oh, you have beautiful eyes. You're really sexy. You know, the good looking girls.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do very early on, I just got to figure this out. I would read their profile, by the way, an amazing idea.
Yeah, do that perhaps.
And I would find something that they like. Okay. So maybe they like horses. Maybe they have a cat. I don't, whatever it is. You go over to YouTube and you find a funny video, right, that has something about a subject they like. Mm-hmm. And then you just say, hey, you know, I saw you online. I really enjoyed your profile. I thought you'd find this funny, right? Guess what you've just done? You've provided value, right? And you've provided fun. And I think you and I have always been aligned. You're not out there being needy. You're not asking for a date. You're not asking for them to pay attention to you. Like a king, right, as a provider of value, you're just handing something to them and asking for nothing in return. And that is the position you really want to be on in with women.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then you get to find out exactly who they are, because the people that can accept the fun are the people you're going to want to be around. Some people just can't. Some people suck. Literally. I mean, they can't accept fun. I mean, I understand the whole point of not buying drinks for people. I get that. To me, it's kind of like a training wheel, because guys have this, you know, I'm going to do this for you so you talk to me thing. I've never had that. I'll spend money. I don't care. And so I'll walk up to a group of people or whatever and buy them a drink and walk off. You know what I mean? But what you can do with that is that you can find out exactly who people are really quickly by doing something like that. And you're like, all right, well, I just spent $5 and I just found out that that's somebody I don't want to hang out with ever again. And it's interesting, but it's just like that. I mean, you could send a video over, and if you don't get a response at all for something like that, well, then, you know, you're just wasting your time.
Next. And one, you know, I have about 40,000 men now who, you know, who are in my community. And it amazes me that the kind of question I get most often is, you know, I did this, and, you know, she gave me a snotty answer back, and I'm okay. So next. Why are you just not
sure
along? And by the way, this is one of the real principles of ageless attraction is abundance. And you and I talk about this all the time. You know, with the internet, you can reach so many people in so many ways so quickly. There's no shortage of women. The only exception may be some of my guys who are out in the middle of, you know, Kentucky and places like that.
Oh, dude, Kentucky is awesome. University of Kentucky, Lexington is awesome. Holy cow, man.
I mean, out in the countryside is what yeah.
But they can drive.
On my way. Exactly. But some guys say, well, I've dated everyone in my county, you know, who's online, and now I'm going to have to start trying. So there are people who don't have a lot. But if you're anywhere near a university or urban area or suburban area, there's so many women, and it's not worth the energy of pursuing women who are nasty to you. If you're in the position of being the guy who provides value, whether it's fun or information or a social setting, any of these things, and they're giving you shit back, you know, don't bother. Move on. It's the equivalent of, you know, eating junk food, you know. Mm-hmm. You spend your time putting that into your body, you're going to feel bad. You spend your time pursuing women who are treating you badly, you're going to feel bad. Don't.
Yeah. Let's touch on that, because that's important. I don't think a lot of guys understand that, but I firmly believe that you train people how to treat you.
Yep.
And part of that is understanding exactly what your boundaries of what you will accept and what you won't accept. And this doesn't necessarily mean you're a hard ass and an asshole or whatever. It just means that you just know what you're going to put up with and what you're not. And it doesn't mean that if somebody crosses that boundary that you next them. But what it means is that you let them know that's a boundary. And most of the time, it's really weird. Even some of the bitchiest women I've ever seen, like, perfect example. This was years ago. I can't believe I've never told this story, but my friend Brian, he had flown into town, and I was doing Hell Club promotions. And so I was in a different town as well. And there was a girl who, I mean, pretty hot or whatever. And I introduced him to her, and she was like, oh, hey, and just kind of walked off and just kind of like was just really cold. I just looked at her straight face, and I was like, hey, I was like, you are a bitch.
Nice.
I said, you are a bitch. And then we walked off. And no lie, within 15 minutes, this girl was buying us drinks.
There you go.
He tells this story all the time. And I'm not saying that because that's what you need to – you don't treat people badly. But it was – this is my best friend who I am going out of my way to introduce to somebody who I thought was okay and pretty cool or whatever. And then all of a sudden it made me look bad. And I was like, oh, hell no.
So you're not advocating walk into a bar, walk up to a woman and say, you are a bitch and expect her to buy your drinks, right?
No, I've tried that. No, it doesn't work. I've tried it. It doesn't work.
You know, that's of the 10 qualities in what I call the irresistible qualities of the advanced masculine. You know, number seven is being able to tell the truth. Being able to tell the truth clearly. And you did. And that's sexy.
Right.
I have a lot of friends. I've also worked in the comedy world. And I have a lot of friends who are comedians. And there's a style of comedy, which is telling the truth. There's dumb mm-hmm. comedy. And there's the kind of people who can really pierce through and tell the truth, like a Chris Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Stanhope. Sarah Silverman's quite good at it.
Sure.
Chelsea Handler. I knew her, man, when she was getting started.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's got her own show. You know, there are people who like cut through and tell the truth, and those are the ones who get the attention from girls, by the way, those comics. The ones who can really cut through and say those hard truths that other people can't say. It's a very sexy quality.
Yeah, it's very, I don't want to call it liberating, but yeah. it's kind of, that's probably the right word, but it's really interesting when you kind of embrace the fact that of telling the truth and but there's a difference between telling the truth because it's the truth and telling the truth and trying to hurt somebody with it.
Absolutely. Yes. It can't be a weapon.
Sure.
But you know, it's funny you say it's liberating. I believe someone said the truth shall set you free. Mm-hmm. Tony Robbins or Jesus or one of those guys.
Voltaire. Who knows?
But I think it's actually, it might be Jesus.
But oh, okay.
The truth is liberating. I mean, it is liberating. Everyone hides with a social mask. I mean, clearly you know this really well.
Mm-hmm.
But people are so protected and so armored. And when you're the man who can walk in and say the truth without the intention to hurt, they will feel liberated to be able to stand in their own truth, tell the truth to themselves, and admit to you things what's really going on with them, women. Because mm-hmm. most guys will have a mask.
Yeah, and if you can be non-judgmental at the same time, oh.
Dude, number eight of the irresistible qualities of the advanced masculine.
Sweet.
Fair judgment. We have not discussed this, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely true. Fair judgment and equanimity. And I have very specific techniques about how to listen and not jump in, right? Not be the young guy jumping in and, you know, getting his ego in there, but really being the guy who's the fair judge and a king,
mm-hmm.
without hitting it too hard. But the provider of value, a king, listens and then has fair judgment. It's one of the most admirable qualities of someone in power is the ability to judge fairly without ego.
Sure.
Right? Without favoritism and to be able to really tell the truth. And when you can tell the truth to a woman, when you can tell her that she's wrong in a situation but do it in a compassionate way without holding back the edge of the truth, that is just so powerful.
Yeah, let's give an example of that really quickly. I've got one in my mind, and I'm sure you've got a couple. But
yeah.
Well, one of the perfect examples of telling the truth and being kind of, I guess, straightforward about it would be if your woman comes up to you and says, you know, how do I look in this dress or how does this look or whatever? And if you always tell her she looks good in something, either she's just blowout bad that never has anything and any bad taste at all, which is very unlikely, or you're lying just to, you know, make her happy, which she knows, which means that every time you say that, it doesn't carry any weight behind it. But if I talked to McKay about this one time, but if you're a guy that says, if she walks in with something and says, you know what, man, that just doesn't do it for you. I mean, some of the other clothes you have really do it for you. That just doesn't. And then she walks in with something else, and you're like, wow. It just carries so much more punch to it.
Yeah, and she can trust you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really weird. Guys, and you kind of talked about being on time and things like that. You know, guys, if they can get a handle on the little things, you know, if a woman can't trust you with the little things, how the hell is she going to be able to trust you with the big things?
Absolutely true. And if she watches you that you're not trustable in your own life, forget mm-hmm. about showing up on time for her, that if you say that I'm going to work out twice a week and you don't work out twice a week,
mm-hmm.
or if you say you're going to do something, and look, I was this guy. I mean, mm-hmm. I was in my 20s and my then wife, you know, took me to task for those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just not your responsibility to her, but also your responsibility to yourself. Are you disciplined? Are you keeping your word to yourself? And that's part of integrity, obviously.
Sure.
It doesn't mean you say you look fat in those jeans, by the way.
No, yeah. You do, again, that's to me, that's manipulation. That's like you're doing something to win a fight, or that she's done something to you in the past and you're trying to get back or whatever. That's the way I look at that.
And on the clothes issue, you can always frame it not as she looks bad, but you know, it's not bringing out your true beauty, for example.
Sure.
I learned from a woman I dated who was a fashionista, you know, that if I wear green, it brings out the green in my eyes. Now, I never thought about that before.
Sure.
But she taught me that. And women have commented ever since then, whenever I wear green, wow, you know, your eyes are so green. And they're not. But when I wear green, for some reason it is. So you could say to a woman like, wow, you know, that really doesn't bring out the brightness of your eyes. It doesn't bring out the green of your eyes. Or, you know, it doesn't bring out the richness of your skin. You know, if they have olive skin and they wear something brown, I happen to hate that, you know?
Right.
You know, I want something that brings out the color of her skin. So you can frame it as it could be, you know, it's not bringing out your beauty the way that it could.
Yeah.
It looks bad.
It's not a personal thing. It's a.
Yeah. It's bringing out the ugliness of your soul.
Yeah. It's like, dude, that dress makes you look like the devil.
Well, that's actually a good thing.
Well, it depends if it's Halloween or maybe, you know, if it's on later on, you know, that's good. But
a great story, by the way, about being funny and fun.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens my 19-year-old is a really funny guy. And he was 14. I was dating this fashionista woman, Beverly Hills, just utterly just beautiful and knew how to dress and all this stuff. And she had a 14-year-old daughter and my son was 14. And the daughter was incredibly beautiful and had amazing clothes. And so we went over there and we were going out all together one night and she came in, she goes, do I look fat in this? And he was like, yeah, a little. He didn't know, right? He's like, yeah. And she went running out of the room and, cause she had never met him.
Right.
And, you know, he's an awesome dude. He's a great looking guy. He's a drummer. You know, he's a really cool guy. And then she comes running in, she redid her hair and she goes, how do you like my hair? And he goes, well, it doesn't make you look fat, you know? Because I gave him the whole talk in between. You never say it makes you look fat.
So, oh, God.
Great moment.
Jesus Christ, man. But that's funny, too, though. I mean, you've got a little mini you running around that you can kind of download stuff into and then sit back like a little this little experiment and kind of watch. You're like, oh.
Well, you know, in some ways, I have to say I've learned a lot from him as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
I taught him a few things when he was younger. And I don't know why I'm mentioning it now because everyone here is older, but I said, look, here's three things I want you to know with girls. I said, number one, I said, you may not, and he was 14 at the time, you may not have sex with a girl who's drunk. I said, that is rape. At your age, you know, if a girl gets drunk, no. And I heard him when I overheard him. His first girlfriend was actually a fashion model. One of the benefits of living in LA, by the way. And she's one of the virgin girls. If you see posters at the airport, she's now one of those. And she was drunk and I overheard her calling up saying, you know, you want to come over and have sex basically. And he said no. And I remember going, wow.
Yeah.
I was 15. you know, no one ever taught me that, but I really taught him it's really important. And the other thing I taught him is that when you have sex, it's going to have more of an emotional impact on girls than it will you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of him in those ways. So I don't want guys to get the wrong idea that I taught my kids to be, you know, wild sex fiends or daters. You know, I really have tried to teach them to be admirable young men, and lo and behold, they're astonishing now.
They're doing okay, man. That's cool, man. Well, I tell you what, I know you've got some stuff coming up, so I guess we can go ahead and close this thing out, man. I really appreciate you being on the call with me today. So Ageless Attraction goes live today, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, and if you guys want to check that out and check Adam out, he's got some good stuff, you can just go to bhlinks.com/ageless, and it'll take you right to it. I don't have the URL offhand, so that I'll just make one really quickly. That's what it is, bhlinks.com/ageless. And you could check him out, man. You got anything to close on really quickly?
Yeah, I do. Why don't we also put a link? You know, a lot of these principles I've applied to online dating.
Mm-hmm.
So at bhlinks, they can also find, you know, online dating. Check that out, too.
I'll put that on the blog, too. That'd be good. Yeah.
It kills me how much men, I've also written a book for women. It's amazing how much men and women waste their time and money and energy by not really learning how to communicate well. Mm-hmm. And it really teaches you how to, first of all, get a grip on your actual value as a man, mm-hmm. and what women actually value in you, not the bullshit surface stuff.
Sure.
And how to communicate that in a language that women can really feel to their core.
Right.
All right.
Makes a lot of sense to me, man. Adam, as always, it was good talking to you, and I appreciate it, buddy.
Pleasure. Oh, great talking to you, too. I don't know how you got so much wisdom so young.
I just talk to guys like you all the time.
All right, dude. I'll see you soon.
All right. Later, buddy.
Thank you.